News from campus matters to you.
And me.
And me.
And me.
And us.
So, weekdays at 5pm, URN brings you The Pulse. 1 hour of news stories that matter to you.
And me.
And me.
And
I think they get the point. The Pulse. Weekdays from 5.
Because the BBC don't care about the beer prices in Mooch.
And you're listening to The Pulse. And today I'm joined by Harkiran, Mary and Hermione. Hermione has got a story on tougher sentences for terrorism plots.
Yeah, so this was from an article published today by The Guardian. And it talks about terrorist plotters are likely to be imprisoned for longer terms under new sentencing guidelines drafted in response to the surge in attacks this year. The judicial body, which promotes consistency across the courts, has recommended tougher punishments, particularly for those convicted of preparing acts of violence. The consultation published by the Sentencing Council suggests that using social media to spread terror messages and encrypted communications to avoid detection should both count as aggravating factors in the severity of any offence. The new guidelines, which will come into force in early 2018, are consistent with the existing maximum sentence of life with a minimum term of 40 years, but the proposals are likely to result in increased punishments for cases at the lower end of the scale. The Sentencing Council draft guidelines call for a sentencing range for the lowest level crimes of between 3 to 6 years, compared with 21 months to 5 years under the existing guidance. Among factors which might reduce the culpability of any offender, it is suggested where someone has engaged in very limited preparation of terrorist activity, provided only limited help, assistance or encouragement. These changes come following the increase in attacks of terror that involve far less sophisticated methods. For example, the motor attack with the van on Westminster Bridge in March, and then the knife attack in Borough Market in June, which also used vehicles, I think. And these obviously both had devastating effects, despite the fact that they were kind of far less sophisticated. This demonstrates perhaps the increase in the availability of extremist material online, which has led to people becoming self-radicalised. Before, we would often hear stories of those coming back from countries such as Syria after being radicalised, whereas now, often the offenders are becoming self-radicalised from the, kind of the comfort of their own home. So I just want to know, like, your opinions on, do you think this is enough to tackle this sudden increase in terrorist attacks, or should we be focusing more on prevention from the start? So kind of better monitoring of radical material online and more support kind of to try and integrate those vulnerable to radicalization into their communities so they feel less isolated. And I think perhaps it's controversial to say, but should we be more aware of those moving to Britain from the Middle East and countries like Syria? Because the recent attack in Parsons Green on the District Line, the 21-year-old who was arrested in connection had arrived in the UK as a refugee from Syria 4 years ago. So I mean, that's a controversial point to bring up, but should we be monitoring them more closely? Yeah, so any opinions?
So, a lot to talk about there. I think in terms of the jail sentences, it's another preventative measure in terms of another deterrent. I don't know if that deterrent is really going to scare people from not doing it, especially as a lot of these attacks are done with the intention of
suicide. Yeah.
So I don't think how much jail time is really going to affect their opinions on whether they are going to carry out the attack or not.
Would it affect their opinions if they, as talked about, kind of low level, perhaps?
Yeah, I was about to mention that. I think people who are involved on a low level scale, as in like people who are the informants or
just posting like radical things online, yeah,
it might make them a bit more reluctant because they are not planning it on a large scale. So I think in terms of that, I think it does help, but I think we do need to look at social media sites really helping it a little bit more. They have done a more as they've been asked to, but I think there's still measures on social media that we can take to stop radicalisation online.
Yeah, I mean, I think you then go to the argument of how much control the government has on your kind of personal life and how much they... I can't think of the word, but like investigate it and intrude.
And I guess that feeds into their ideology.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we can't have people spreading messages like that online.
Yeah.
That people of a vulnerable nature could take in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like and this is my opinion, it's kind of like a plague that spreads online.
Yeah.
It's a wave of movement that's not, that you can only stop by restricting.
By having that level of control. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the online definitely needs to be policed better, and I think there will be a lot of questions and red flags about the invasion of privacy that might bring. Like, ridiculously, I think it was about 4 years ago when I was doing some coursework for my A-level in history, I was doing it all based on terrorism between like 1985 to 2005, so I was researching a lot of stuff based on terrorist activity, how people went about conducting a terrorist action. And I was in two minds about it. My mum's like, we're gonna get a knock on the door any day.
Yeah, from all your activity online.
It did seem quite suspicious. But then at the same time, I was kind of like, would I not prefer to have that knock on the door for them to actually assess the threat?
Yeah, and actually look,
and actually know that I'm not a threat?
It's like when you go abroad. Like, I once went on holiday when I was 16 to Ukraine and Moldova and was using my bank card and it wasn't stopped. And I was a bit like, this is really dodgy, because I'd quite liked my bank card to be stopped, because why would a 16-year-old be using their bank card in Ukraine?
Yeah, no, of course. It's just so strange. But then there's extremes, isn't there? Because then there's doing that, but then are you only going after people based on racial profiles, or do you need to look at hotspot areas in which people are being radicalised? I was going to say turned. That is not the right term.
Well, this is a controversial issue with, as your last point, restricting people coming back from Syria. That you
I think
can, you
I don't
be.
Know about. I think it's like the. It's whether you have a more watchful eye on them.
Mm.
Because, I mean, the Parsons Green attack, although it didn't actually go to plan. I mean, I was meant to be on that train because I was doing an internship, and that was a train that I got every single morning. And so, I mean, if it had gone to plan, like, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, you don't, it's very controversial, and I'm not being racist, and you don't want to be racist about these kind of things, but there is a certain level, I think, of not restricting people's movement and not saying, oh, you're from Syria, you can't come in. Obviously not. But I think we do need to watch at these people who are very vulnerable to it and make sure we do integrate them into society so that they aren't isolated and don't feel like aren't drawn to radicalisation.
Greater background checks, I think, is a big thing. I think this is like pre a lot of terrorism. Near me back home in West London, there was a girl who was missing for ages, and it found out that she was murdered by this Polish man who had previous history of such extreme violence in Poland. And I think there's something to be said for like tighter restrictions on certain types of ex-criminals, or like that, like a certain level of policing going on with understanding the background, because apparently that wasn't even flagged up as an issue when he was immigrating
into
the country.
Yeah, I mean, this is the issue, is the guy, the Parsons Green guy, they interviewed people who he'd lived with in Syria, and apparently he was from a really well-off family in Syria that was really well-known, and everybody was completely shocked because his family's so well-known and well-loved, and then he'd committed this act, and everyone was like, well, hold on, this is so... There were
out
no
of
signs.
Character.
Yeah, so out of character, and there were no signs. So,
well, that would suggest radicalisation in the UK.
In the UK, exactly. And so that's why we have to be careful about making sure these people aren't vulnerable to it, because it seems to be happening here. So we need to, it's kind of, we need to control that and help them, I think.
Yeah, as it's also stems from a religious issue. I know that religious leaders across the country are doing a lot, but there is. Charities and religious groups who are trying their hardest to stop the radicalisation as well, because these people, in their opinion, are still religious, they're just taking that religion to an extreme. And I know a lot of religious leaders are targeted by media after terrorist attacks and are brought over and said, oh, why can't you fix this?
Why are you not controlling these people?
And they are doing a lot already, and it shouldn't be up to them to, you know, to control all the people that believe their religion, you know? I think there was an interesting, the last Westminster attack, there was an interesting point made by somebody who was working for a charity who were helping mothers who suspected their sons of becoming radicalised.
Oh, really? That's quite interesting.
Because the mothers have a special role in the family where things can be said. Things can
like
be
in confidence.
So they were working with mothers because they have this special access, which, you know, neighbours and things like that wouldn't have in terms of reporting things to the police. But it's quite hard when it's a family matter as well. I think it's a very delicate issue because a lot of people have very strong feelings about this. I mean, a lot of people have witnessed horrific acts in the past few years, and there is a lot of tension in this country over it.
Yeah, especially with the whole kind of Brexit and immigration and whatnot.
There's a lot of tension. But I think in terms of measures, I think this tougher jail sentences will deter the lower workers in terms of plotting an attack. Do you guys think that's
Maybe you could see it as those who would radicalise younger people would be in jail for a longer time, maybe.
Yes.
So that could help as a preventative measure. I'm just thinking now, like, if they've been caught for, like, this activity online or something, they're going to be in jail for a longer time, so they're not going to have access to these vulnerable kind of young people, and hope maybe that might be a measure or something.
It gives the court more power as well.
Could there be the potential, though, that in prison people become radicalised?
Yeah,
I was just thinking.
And because they're kind of, if people are together with kind of a similar mindset, and then when they then come out of prison, are we going to have more of an issue?
Yeah, no, I can. I think wherever these people are, it's going to be an issue. Maybe, and then you can look at the prison system and how...
Do they need to go into some sort of solitary confinement?
Where do
the measures end?
Because the prison is overrun already.
Yeah, there's too many people in there
can't separate once in the prison. Like, it would be
The prison's always in the news currently about, like, funding and shutting the prisons down, but then there's no space for all these criminals, so...
But it's interesting that the sentences beforehand were so low.
I know, I was looking at that. But they haven't been increased that much.
No.
It's what, 3 to 6 years compared with 21 months to 5 years, so...
I mean, 6 years is a little bit more, but three years for helping to plot a terrorist attack is quite...
Yeah, because that's with the intention of presumably taking multiple lives. Like, it's... Why would you not go to prison? Like... You are plotting a murder and you're only being sentenced for 3 years.
3 years,
you have all those 3 years to plot your
and
next
not even
murder.
One murder, like multiple murders.
Yeah,
right.
Go on, no.
Sorry, I think the emphasis, I guess, has to be on rehabilitation and kind of how people get reintegrated back into the community.
Maybe introducing religious leaders into prisons.
Encouraging
role models in some way. Because a lot of these that have been radicalised see their radicalisers as role models. If you take their access away from them in prison, then you've got people looking for religious role models.
Maybe like re-educating them on the true message of their own religion.
Exactly.
Because a lot of... I'm not going to claim to have read the Quran or anything like that, but a lot of people who have...
It's not always Islamic either, is it?
No, or like any religious leader who feels they are following the faith to the core says that at the core of XYZ religion, it is peaceful.
Yeah, exactly. And like, no one is... Yeah.
And so it's difficult.
Sorry.
It's difficult.
I lost my train of thought.
Because everything's very twisted and... It's serving a different agenda, as in East-West agenda, rather than a religious agenda, these sort of terrorist attacks.
Yeah. I think it's a very hard topic to address, and I think we've addressed almost all the ends we could, really, to be honest. It's quite a hard one because not only are you extending the amount of people in prison, which is a problem in itself, it's also maybe not seen as so much of a deterrent because people are prepared to go to such lengths in terms of this issue. But as we said, it might deter the smaller levels of the organisation to stop, which is always good. You know, you can't work on your own, which is encouraging.
This is URN The Pulse.
So we've had some really serious stories today on The Pulse. We've had a story about Trump and UNESCO and fake news. We talked about the care services under pressure, and we talked about tougher sentences for terrorism plotters. If you want to get in contact about any of those serious stories, you can at urn1350.net. But now we're going to go to a little bit more of a light-hearted story from Mary and talk about why people love French kissing.
Okay, so yeah, I thought we needed something a bit more different and less serious. So I found a think piece on The Independent about French kissing. It's also known as deep kissing, if you didn't know that. I hadn't heard of that.
Oh, no.
They kind of mentioned a bit about the evolutionary reasons why people French kiss. So apparently it allows us to get close and identify whether we're most compatible and have an evolutionary advantage with someone else. Not all cultures French kiss or even kiss, and those who don't are more likely to get close to kind of smell each other. So apparently this helps know whether you like a partner.
Sniffing each other.
Oh, I did read something about if you are truly attracted to someone, you're meant to be okay with the smell of their sweat. So I don't know if this links in. I don't know.
Like the idea of BO.
Yeah.
Oh, this is well, so grim.
Once you get to a certain point in relationship, you know, that's...
Just give up on showering.
Sorry, carry on, Mary.
I've also got some other fun facts about... So sexual arousal apparently is lessens feelings of disgust, which means that you're more likely to do things that have a risk of infection. Yes, and the other thing is that the universities of Bath and Bath Spa did an investigation and found that 79% of men initiated kissing. So I was wondering whether maybe that's a social norm, or is that a biological thing, or evolutionary?
I think that's quite social, isn't it? Maybe. Power complex, maybe.
I think it's social because, yeah, because it's like kind of like the
it's
idea
just
the of
thing. That's just the
men being
happens.
The gentleman, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's kind of like a, I guess it's kind of like a sexist thing, really.
Yeah,
if we're going feminist down that road.
I know. Why don't we kiss first? Honestly.
My favourite bit of the article was this kind of excerpt that I've kind of changed slightly, but. You probably wouldn't go up to a stranger in a nightclub, give them in the eye, and then say, hey, do you mind if I borrow your toothbrush? So why do we go up and kiss them?
Who knows?
Yeah, like, essentially, tequila? Like, a tongue in the mouth must be the same as, like, the germs you spread through a toothbrush. Like.
Yeah.
So would you share a toothbrush with someone else?
Would I share a toothbrush? I have.
Yeah, I have.
Is that not a good thing to reveal on radio?
I think it's different when you're drunk and you're sober. Yeah. I think you have to know
you don't really
the
think through like all those germs.
You have to think through the cleanliness of the other person a toothbrush with.
I don't think I'd be less likely to kiss someone if I wasn't drunk.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? What are you guys all saying?
Well, no, just imagine
if it's like a random stranger.
I'm just imagining.
I don't know how likely I am to kiss them.
If it was a random stranger, maybe I'd be a little bit more hesitant to kiss them if I wasn't intoxicated.
Well,
depends like the level of randomness, the level of drunkness. Like you could do like a graph here, couldn't you?
So, if you guys are happy to share like a toothbrush with someone, do you think that kissing is gross, or is that not?
I think we've been brought up to think it's not. It's like a social practice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not gross.
I think the idea of like any sexual encounter is
we've like if you think about it, then it's grim.
Yeah, but we've been taught to think it's the right way to do it. It's interesting that some cultures don't.
Yeah.
Kiss. What did you find out? Which cultures they were?
There are some cultures that kiss only in private, such as countries like India, Thailand, and Bangladesh. And I found a Daily Mail article from a few years ago, so I was slightly dubious as to whether it's up to date.
And it's
or
the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
Just a comment.
But they were kind of putting out this article that was saying that actually only 50% of cultures kiss, which I thought was potentially
surprising.
A bit of an underestimate.
Yeah, maybe kiss in public, because I can imagine lots of countries where it's and very conservative,
Well, I don't particularly like kissing in public.
No, PDA, who does that?
I think the other thing is, I think when Mary first found this article, we were talking about how long a kiss would last. Like, after X amount of time, it just kind of, unless you're, like, really into the situation, if it's just, like, meant to be a quick kiss, and
or
then
you're just bored, like, if you're just
bored, then you start thinking about other stuff.
You're kind of like, what am I doing? This is really weird.
This is weird, like, should I stop now? No, it's just going on too long.
And we've had a text in about this story. It says, I love a French kiss from Yoram. Nice to know.
Big up.
but no, yeah, I mean, sometimes you can
read... Only Tories read the Daily Mail. There you go. The legitimacy of...
that's someone's opinion.
Yeah, one person's opinion.
But no, it's quite interesting to know that it is a social practice. Because you couldn't argue it's biological, could you? Because there's no benefit to kissing.
Yeah, there's no biological...
Yeah, this is what... what I was reading was saying that it's evolutionary and it helps you identify, but there doesn't seem to be any obvious...
Helps you identify...
like a compatible...
A potential, yeah.
So if they're not a good kisser, then they're not compatible with you? Is that
I think
it
was more about getting close to them, kind of smelling them and kind of sharing...
intimacy. Saliva.
Yes, and the article was talking about immunity and...
Right.
Kind of germs I suppose, like, in the past, before, like, injections and stuff, that was a thing. Yeah. Potentially, like, in the distant, you know, very long ago,
we might
have all been allergic to each other.
I've had some people messaging saying they would share a toothbrush, others who's been in a long-term relationship for a little while saying they wouldn't.
Well, this is quite revealing from in terms of a student point of view, isn't it, that... but I think that's all we've got time for on the toothbrush dilemma and the French kissing. Harkiran's dying in the studio.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me, Harkiran, Mary and Hermione, today. The Pulse is back on tomorrow, 5 till 6, but I think we're going to be followed by the sports show now, so stay tuned for that. If you have any opinions, just message in at urn1350.net, but I'm going to leave you with She's On My Mind by JP Cooper.
She's on my mind, she's on my mind.